So this is Wild Geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine.
But mostly, poet Mary Oliver told us of her amazement, her wonder, her work, which, as she wrote, was standing still and learning to be astonished. She asked us, tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? And she gave us an answer. Instructions for living a life, she wrote. Pay attention. Be astonished. Tell about it. Mary Oliver died Friday at 83. Her work will live on. We know she believed we all will, just as a beloved buried dog will sprout a rose bush next spring. All weekend, she's been trending on social media. Wonder what she would have thought of that. She won a Pulitzer in 1984, later a National Book Award, was beloved. But did she get the critical recognition she should have? Ruth Franklin's piece in The New Yorker in 2017 was titled What Mary Oliver's Critics Don't Understand. Ruth, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Before we get to that, and this, by the way, will come as a shock to people for whom she was life-saving. I mean, that's how you begin your article, a fictional character saying, Mary Oliver saved my life.
That's right. And, you know, if you just Google that phrase, you'll see it everywhere on social media, on people's personal blogs, on people's prayer blogs. Believe it, there is such a thing. Mm-hmm. She was just adored by people who felt that she had the right words for them at the most difficult moments of their lives.
Yeah. This is a character, Paul Chowder, in a novel from Nicholson Baker, in which, you know, the character is trying to find something to save his life. He goes through different poets and he comes upon Mary Oliver. And he says of her poems, you write, they're very simple, each has something. Immediately I felt more sure of what I was doing.
I suspect that Nicholson Baker was kind of making a little joke at it in the novel, because this character is an academic poetry critic, and that's just the sort of person who was least likely, unfortunately, to appreciate Mary Oliver during her lifetime.
Well, we'll talk a bit about that, but first a thumbnail of that lifetime. She wandered the woods mostly on Cape Cod with Walt Whitman in her backpack, her notebook and pen, observing the world, turning it into her beautiful poetry. Outside rather than in, because as she told Krista Tippett of On Being in her incredible interview, and we'll link you to it at hereandnow.org, I don't care for the enclosure of buildings, and that has been traced back to the fear of her father, memories of abuse at his hands, a neglectful mother, a house that she hated and had to get out of. And so where do we see that in her poetry? What is, for the uninitiated, what is she doing?
There's a sense in her poetry of somebody who is very independent, very individual, in the tradition of the American poets she loved, like Whitman, striking out on her own to begin a totally new life. She left home at a very young age and kind of bounced around, I think, a bit from place to place before settling in Provincetown on Cape Cod and conducting the life that she did the way she writes about it in her poems, encountering the natural world, walking on the beach, fishing and gathering mussels and blackberries. And it's a life that in many ways is unencumbered. And I think part of what readers respond to in her poetry is the sense that this is a person who experienced some kind of great sorrow. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't need to be specific about exactly what that was.
Here she is speaking to Krista Tippett about the natural world. Let's listen.
That the world is pretty much, everything's mortal. It dies, but its parts don't die. Its parts become something else. And we know that when we bury a dog in the garden and with a rose bush on top of it. We know that there is replenishment. And that's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. A line from another poem. She wants to tell the wren, the sleepy dug-up clam, life goes on, life goes on. And yet you remind us that the critic David Orr wrote of her poetry, one can only say that no animals appear to have been harmed in the making of it. He also said of this idea of her poems overcoming personal challenges, if it worked as self-help, you'd see more poets driving BMWs. This, again, would be astonishing to her fans. What was the problem?
Well, I can't speak for David Orr, but I think it's astonishing that she was dismissed so, you know, out of hand the way she was by so many critics. You know, she didn't even receive a full-length review in the New York Times until Devotions came out.
And that was just recently.
That's right. And I think, you know, part of that is the relative simplicity of her language. Her poems sound like conversation. You don't need any kind of specialized education in order to read them and understand them. And that's kind of counter to the general trend in academic poetry criticism these days, where I think there tends to be a preference for poems that are encoded or, you know, seem to require some kind of specialized knowledge. And obviously that's something that's alienating to the general reader. Mm. I wouldn't say that Mary Oliver was deliberately trying to take advantage of that, but she certainly tapped into a vein of desire for a more plain-spoken, you know, more straight-to-the-heart form of poetry.
Let's listen to one. This is her 2001 reading of The Fish.
The first fish I ever caught would not lie down quiet in the pail, but flailed and sucked at the burning amazement of the air and died in the slow pouring off of rainbows. Later, I opened his body and separated the flesh from the bones and ate him. Now the sea is in me. I am the fish. The fish glitters in me. We are risen, tangled together, certain to fall back to the sea. Out of pain and pain and more pain, we feed this feverish plot. We are nourished by the mystery.
Yeah, I love that poem so much. And I think part of what we see in it is it begins with this, you know, very natural image from the real world, you know, that sounds like an experience. She's talking about the first time she went fishing and seeing what happens, the brutality of it. Mm-hmm. And then it takes this turn towards the end and becomes a religious poem in which the fish, you know, isn't just the fish anymore. It's the fish of Christ. And it rises into a meditation on the mystery of death and how all things come around again.
Well, and God is in everything. Thomas Mann wrote the book God of Dirt, Mary Oliver, and the other book of God, making the point that her poetry does have theological interpretation because her poems address questions that are religious, like what is sacred, what is holy, what is our place in the family of things. And she wrote, I don't know who God is exactly, but I'll tell you this. If God exists, he isn't just butter and good luck. He's also the tick that killed my wonderful dog, Luke. If God exists, he isn't just churches and mathematics. He's the forest. He's the desert. He's the ice caps that are dying. Her sense that God was in everything and everyone.
That's right. The beautiful things and also the ugly things. And I think that's something that also has not been as appreciated as it might be about her work, is that these aren't just, you know, beautiful nature poems about birds and flowers. They're about brutality. They're about death. The corpse of the stillborn kitten that she finds and buries and what happens after that.
Well, and you mentioned death. She wrote about it. Her longtime partner, Molly Malone Cook, died in 2005. Mary Oliver had a bout with lung cancer. In her exquisite When Death Comes, like The Hungry Bear in Autumn, she writes, when it's over, I want to say all my life I was a bride married to amazement. I was the bridegroom taking the world into my arms. And when it's over, I don't want to wonder if I have made of my life something particular and real. I don't want to find myself sighing and frightened or full of argument. I don't want to end up simply having visited this world. She was very conscious of her mortality.
That's right. She talks about it in a number of poems, and always, again, with the emphasis, I think, that we hear in that poem of mindfulness, of wanting to make the most of every moment to the extent possible. And, you know, maybe that's something also that seems too sincere for the irony of the Poetry Academy. It's almost embarrassing how enthusiastic she is for life and for the world. It's a position that we don't hear very much of these days. And I think, you know, it's something that there's a longing for.
And where would you put her in the pantheon of American poets?
Oh, I think, you know, among contemporary poets, certainly she's at the very top. She's had a wonderful, unique way of expressing, a way of looking at the world.
Ruth Franklin, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll link you to Ruth's writing in The New Yorker, and we leave you with Mary Oliver reading portions of her Tropic of Cancer on Being.
The question is, what will it be like after the last day? Will I float into the sky, or will I fray within the earth or a river, remembering nothing? How desperate I would be if I couldn't remember the sun rising, if I couldn't remember trees, rivers, if I couldn't even remember, beloved, your beloved name. I know you never intended to be in this world, but you're in it all the same. So why not get started immediately? I mean, belonging to it. There is so much to admire, to weep over, and to write music or poems about.